y'all, it's Stephanie from Root to Seed. I hope everyone's doing well with the planting season in full swing. Today we'll be talking about permaculture, but first the news. The seedling sale we're doing, this is the second annual seedling sale, has been going great. We do still have some remaining plants. If there's anything that you're looking for, just send us a message for the most updated list of what we have. The chicks have joined the hens in the coop, and it seems to be a love-hate relationship, but I do know that they will get their alpha status figured out, and then they'll be good to go. We used a method of extending their daytime visit and then sneaking them into the roosting box at night. We've also planted everything left out into our gardens, and that's it for the news. As you may have noticed, since the podcast began, it's been a continuing education, starting with the basics and moving into more complex ideas. I saved permaculture discussion until now to be sure you'd already have the basics and have had some experience with the vocabulary and such. Okay, let's get to it. Bill Mollison was a lecturer at Hobart University and considered the father of permaculture. Bill and one of his students, David, came up with the term permaculture by combining the vision of permanent, quote-unquote, sustainable agriculture and our culture, which is the way we live. Writing the definition of permaculture as consciously designed landscapes which mimic the patterns and relationships found in nature while yielding an abundance of food, fiber, and energy for provision of local needs. Put in simpler terms, it's mimicking nature with our environments to create strong ecosystems that benefit people, plants, animals, waterways, and soil in sustainable ways. Topics involved could include forestry, agriculture, renewable energy, water harvesting, eco-building methods, animal systems, waste management, technology, economics, and community development. Drawing all of them together in a way that shifts us from a vulnerable consumer to a responsible producer. Most people think of sustainability when thinking about permaculture design and philosophy. A sustainable system produces the same amount of energy it consumes, allowing the system to continue to recreate. Permaculture builds on sustainability by aiming to create a surplus that helps diversity and fertility. Permaculture aims to grow food in the community to reduce food miles, consumption, and waste, also teaching people, building community, and returning industrial farmland back to nature. Many problems can be solved by home gardening. Home gardens are extremely productive compared to its rural counterparts per square foot, and gardens can also cultivate soil much faster, averaging up to 2 inches per year. Once the home garden is in order, we focus on a citywide scale, then expand into reducing resource consumption in other areas, like electricity, for example, installing solar panels. Rules to follow for permaculture design philosophy include reduce pollution and waste, prevent deforestation, reduce soil erosion, use the least amount of land possible for our own existence, establish refuges for threatened plants and animals, help replace lost minerals, calculate energy audits on resources used, and assess any negative biosocial effects and work to eliminate. And we'll review every little bit of that over the course of this podcast. Permaculture is naturally a shift away from industrial agriculture. Monocrops like corn are the most destructive type of farming, totally dependent on external inputs like oil, also contributing to pollution and destroying resources, while yielding very little. What we want to convert is to a tree crop that gets most of its energy requirements from the farm itself, minimizing what we're bringing into the system, while monitoring the outputs such as dollars produced, environmental biodiversity, fertility, energy, conservation, and social capital. So the high nutrient whole foods and meaningful work. Tree crops yield more than monocrops, while providing more nutrient diversity and resources for the crops such as compost from leaves. When converting from a conventional agriculture to permaculture, 70% of the land should be productive forest. This allows for proper production and stability. permaculture principles are quick checklist in terms of design to help people avoid confusion and risks and implement integrated holistic solutions faster and more effectively. The only error you can make when following principles is not learning from your mistakes. The errors are what lead us to innovation and evolution. So don't be afraid to make mistakes on your path of learning. There are two sets of principles, design and ethic principles. And I'll be back in just a few seconds to talk about that. Permaculture ethics principles were created from studying older religious communities like Taoism and cooperative groups like indigenous tribal groups, and learning from their successes and trying to avoid their failures. There are three main ethics. The first is earth care. Only use resources if necessary and do so only as needed without waste. Always ask the questions, will this resource be better in shape after my stewardship? And what does the land or person have to give if I cooperate with it? Aim to treat all living and non-living things with equal respect. Then the goal to benefit and preserve rather than degrade and deplete. Making sure the right people are in control of the land is also a part of looking after the earth. Three main resources are water, soil, and forests. The second is people care. Foster a cooperative community, avoiding exploitation, personal responsibility, and self-reliance. We start with providing for one's own needs, then move outward, building a culture of place where people want to live and contribute. The third is return of surplus, or limit consumption and reproduction. The difficult task of setting limits is easier when we know how the world works and what's enough. Surplus time, resources, and wealth from our environments should be given to other people or returned to the earth through planting a new forest, composting, animal feed, and such. These three ethics build on one another, and they're also interconnected. Permaculture is about teaching how to implement strategies based on these ethics in an effort to sustain people and the earth through systems' continual yields. Learning from the past while staying focused on the present. When we implement ethics, it becomes easier to create cooperative elements with each other and also nature, helping to build a permanent community. Success is seen through the use of ethical design science, the natural systems ethics, which include oppose continuing to destroy any more forests or nature, helping to restore damages in natural systems to their natural stable state, develop plant systems for our use on the least amount of land required, and develop safe havens for animals and plants that are threatened. The use of limited land or the least amount of land required is the area of permaculture that is mainly focused on. And then there are some design principles. You want to partner with nature. You want to shift your perspective. The solution lies in the problem. Focus on small changes that create the largest impact, like damming a stream where you can get the most water that requires little, if any, earth moving. Yields are unlimited. The only thing that limits them is our imagination and knowledge. Everything gardens. Think of a deer pruning bushes or a hen digging. We must observe where it belongs in the system if we should control, manage, or tolerate its effects on the ecosystem. Both sets of ethics contribute to an all-encompassing ethic of respect for all life forms, which really we should just have as an ethic for everyone. The design systems created are not new. It is simply rearranging what's already in place in a different way, and maybe adding some locally sourced resources as long as they're not rampant or invasive. Our job is two-sided. We need to develop household designs that are created to supply our food and energy needs, while also applying conservation and rehabilitation of species and wilderness from agricultural land. We need to bring back damaged systems and aim to use the minimum amount of land to provide our needs and build diversity and fertility. I'll be back in a few seconds to put all these pieces together for you. Sometimes, taking in new information and then attempting to facilitate what you learned can be daunting. Well, we're here to help you. Did you know Root to Seed offers consultation? This can be done on-site if you're local, or it could be done virtually. We can help with planning, problem-solving, designing, insect or disease issues, or pretty much any other questions you have. If you're interested, you can contact us through the website or email at www.roottoseedonline.com if you'd like additional information. We hope to hear from you. Life and nature is always shifting, changing, and reacting. It's never the same. Our designs should observe and record these current changes, along with what we know from the past, helping to co-create self-evolving systems while reducing work and increasing yields. We want our work to be in managing the system rather than maintaining it, bordering on the edge of chaos with minimal inputs. There's no exact rule book in permaculture. Designs will evolve naturally as the principles are followed and feedback is given. There is, however, one main law we should follow. We must return what we take, with either an equal or greater resource than we consumed. Designs should work to use all energy a site receives before it passes the system. You want the system to catch and store as much energy as possible, helping to satisfy living components' basic needs of maintenance, growth, and reproduction before leaving. A good example of this is catching and storing water collected as it rains. Permaculture design aims to develop long-lasting systems that lessen waste, functioning through just management that's constant maintenance. This is done by using nature to perform system duties like watering, tilling, pruning, and fertilizing. Resources are energies coming into our system like wind, sun, and rain, along with living components like plants and animals, and maybe some technological units we've created as well. The four resources I'm about to discuss need to be used wisely. It is easier to save resources than it is to create them. The fifth resource should just be banned, and we'll get to that in a second. If we are to have a sustainable society and apply proper resource management, we must keep resources in balance and avoid under and oversupply. The resources include modest use creates a surplus. So pruning causes some plants, like fruit trees, to increase. Not changed by use. For example, a well-managed ecosystem shouldn't change much, even when you're using it. Degrade or are lost with no use. So an annual garden, ripe fruit, water runoff, vacant buildings, these are all good examples of that. Reduce when used. So mature forests will decrease with use. And the fifth, which again should be banned, is destroy or pollute when used. So areas of concrete connecting to sewer systems that bring pollutants into the sea, pesticides, or other chemicals are examples of this. Through our resource management, we supply the system's need for maintenance, growth, and reproduction. The surplus provided over and above is our yield. Yields can be a number of different things, like health, water, social interactions, nutrition, energy, or security. Living things, which include people, are needed to effectively intervene and collect resources to produce a yield, which is only limited to the connection made, strategies applied, information, and the ability of our designer. Defined in that way, yields have no limits, as we can always improve our systems. We can always gain knowledge and information. The key is to know what is enough and not push the system into overproducing or oversupplying, which creates chaos, kills yields, and creates excess waste. The goal is to broaden out the yield over time so that lots of products are available during each season. This is done by variety selection, planting schedules, and increasing diversity. storage of yields is also important. So good times should be used to prepare for lean times through the use of low energy methods, like preserving your tomatoes into marinara sauce. Cycles are repeating events. This is what we aim to create when intercepting resources that enter our system. Cycles are time-based opportunities. Good design accounts for cycles in time, just like a park is used by different groups of people during the day. Niches are opportunities in space, a place to be, room to operate, to find shelter and food. When we have both together, it provides diversity and events. More cycles means more diversity. Scheduling is a niche in space and time. A prime example is when particular species graze land at a particular time in nature. But no species owns anything and will need to share or move to another area when competition arrives. So you'll have niches in space, like a forage site or a nest, time, opportunities through cycles, and schedules, the best way to introduce new species of cooperative mammals. I'll return in a few seconds to discuss pyramids, food webs, and growth. Fun fact, 300 trout are needed to support one man for a year. The trout, in turn, must consume 90,000 frogs that must consume 27 million grasshoppers that live off of 1,000 tons of grass. Whatever we eat, an energy budget needs to be done. So one should get rid of fixed ideas, look carefully at their food cabinets, and work to lower food imports, energy loss, and waste. A responsible diet isn't easy, but the solutions can be found in home gardening. Omnivorous diets, or diets which include any type of food, make the greatest use of complex natural systems, meaning we should eat at every level of what is edible. Local conditions and climate ultimately play a largest part in the best diet for someone. For example, harsh winters may require eating animals, and living on the coast leads to eating fish. You can eat plant-based and still have an animal permaculture farm. The real danger is the toxins in the supply chain and industrial farming. Regardless of the diet, the most sustainable way to obtain food is from a home garden. In a permaculture system, there's a complex series of connections. We'll never completely understand how they all interconnect together. We simply put what we think are essentials and then let the system take care of the details. Checking yields as a gauge of system health. Modern agriculture destroys connection and diversity in effort to control the ecosystem. This creates the need for constant maintenance and energy inputs. When things are working together beneficially, they're in order, producing energy beyond what is consumed in a balanced manner. Disorder creates consumption that's not useful. When we try to control something like a residential lawn, we're creating disorder. It requires constant inputs and maintenance. Lacking or overabundance creates chaos. Strive for harmony through balance of production and consumption. There are two functions in permaculture, forced and permitted. For permitted, you can think natural. Our goal is to correctly place a resource with the element it needs close by, reducing stress, making sure not to overwork, such as expecting a cow to raise a calf, give milk, haul water, forage, etc. There needs to be a balance of natural workload that uses complementary capabilities, so that we aren't expecting a chicken to just lay 300 eggs in one place every day. Modern agriculture is a system of forced functions, which overwork and stress plants and animals into maximum production. Diversity is the amount of different constructs or components in systems. The elements must work beneficially with each other to create production, remove waste, and provide stability. Diversity alone is not enough. information is the best resource for creating designs that group elements together in a mutually beneficial way. When the systems are mature, we create some disturbance or stress in the system to develop an even richer environment. Stability is self-regulation in your ecosystem. So self-regulation is possible through constant responses and feedback, elements adjusting and reacting to continue productivity. Systems naturally evolve, and it's our job to maintain balance and maintain stability. Looking at the feedback, like climate change impacts, and making adjustments as needed. In wild and design systems, there's a relationship between time and yield. For example, in old mature systems, not as much energy is required. It's done growing and it just needs to maintain itself. However, the yield in this old system will be less, but we still have very high quality and efficiency. Yield should not be measured monetarily, but by energy. Systems that waste energy to make money will fail in the future. There are fast and slow time cycles. Slow cycles are usually in mature systems with events like fires or flooding that create a slow renewal. Fast time cycles are annual agriculture, which are too energy intensive. In permaculture, we aim to balance time and yield with annual and perennial plants, which the perennials free up time from the gardener. And time off the gardener is also a resource that must be managed. Permaculture designs always start with analysis, just like anything else. You need your soil tests and your measurements. We include what's already there and what we want to add. Our goal is to recognize and place all components so that they'll all be useful. Building these useful connections also helps to reduce outwork. Designing items to be installed wherever they'll be used and distance in relation to the amount of times that we'll frequent it. We need to look at each component's needs and outputs. So some of the design site components will include earth, water, landscape, plants, and climate. Your energy components will include technology, the connections, the structures, and the sources. There are some abstract components that include whatever data it is you collected, timing, and ethics. And then there are social components that include culture, people, finance and trade, and legal aids. For information, like this podcast, to be a resource, we need to put it into use. Otherwise, it's only potentially useful. Three of many approaches to observation, which include instrumental, which is going to be your soil pH test, thematic, which is the observation of a theme like water storage, and experiential, which is using our senses to feel. We need to be on site using observation as a design tool. Sitting at a desk, looking through catalogs is not going to provide the data that you need. Data like wildlife patterns and the effects of rain. First, we want to shut down and open up our minds. Just observe and feel the site. Next, we can start to develop a strategy, looking at our data without any judgment, guessing the meaning of the information gathered, and then you start to do more research, discover patterns, link components, and the site will start to design itself. We want to observe and learn from nature. Attempt to use biomimicry of the natural systems all around you. To put your observations from nature into action, you'll look at structure, process, landscape, and philosophy. We need to find the niches in nature and fill them with what we want. We want to keep our options open and explore all of them. As sequences unfold, each choice will lead to more options. Eventually, we'll reach our goal with enough action through results and experience. One more short break before I talk about flowcharts and my final thoughts. Testing your soil is one of the most important, if not the most important, step in any type of growing. Did you know that Root to Seed provides a safe soil fund for those who live in certain areas that may be at risk for lead in the soil? Root to Seed can help to fund and navigate the testing. You can visit our Safe Soil Fund page on www.roottoseedonline.com for more information. Flowcharts help design efficient spaces and action. The chart will help position things where and when you'll need them. There are six zones, starting with zone zero, which is our home, built to be naturally efficient, utilizing climatic effects to meet our needs. These could include solar, water, waste outputs, heat, companion animals, living roofs, that sort of thing. Zone one surrounds our home and includes our kitchen garden and elements that need the most attention. Zone two becomes more in tune with natural systems. It has food forests, small animals, and broad-scale crops. Zone three is much less attended and is meant for grazing animals and hardy trees. Zone four is a designed forest left to grow wild with only occasional pruning and harvesting. And zone five is wilderness, furthest from your home and used for recreation and observation. Items are placed in their zones according to their maintenance needs. So for example, you might visit your chicken coop 460 times a year while you're only visiting an oak tree twice. So the chicken coop should be placed in zone one. Energy sectors will also shape elements in zones. Take note of sun pathways, angles, wind and rain patterns, views that you'd like to see or obstruct, noise, dust, smells, where rain floods, where you get frost. There is a golden rule. Develop the closest areas first. And once that's complete, move out to the next zone. Each zone builds on one another. What you learn from zone one, you can bring into zone two. And as you move further out, nature takes on more of a role, which can also teach you more things and bring new ideas into zone one. I hope you enjoyed this podcast, and hopefully you learned something new about permaculture. Perhaps you'll adopt some or all of its concepts. I want to remind you to message us to get the most updated list of seedlings if you still need any plants. And if you're enjoying the podcast, that's great. Do subscribe and leave a review on your favorite platform. Next week, we're taking a break for the holiday and getting our gardens in order and allowing you to catch up on some episodes. When we return, we'll discuss composting. Until then, be kind to the planet, be kind to each other, and join our community.